Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, June 26, 2017. The Supreme Court is letting the Trump administration enforce its 90-day ban on Muslims and refugees, travelers from six mostly Muslim countries, overturning lower court orders that blocked it. The ban would apply to citizens of Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The action today is a victory for Trump and his administration and its biggest legal controversy so far. Trump last week said the ban would take effect 72 hours after being cleared by the courts. In an unsigned opinion, the court left one category of foreigners protected, those with a credible claim of a bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the U.S. The Trump administration said the ban was needed to allow an internal review of the screening procedures for visa applicants from those countries. The review should be completed before October 2nd, the first day the justices could hear arguments in their new term. Amnesty International says this bigoted ban can't be allowed to take effect again, and Congress needs to step in immediately to nullify it once and for all. Amnesty says it's always been crystal clear that the policy was based on discrimination. Reinstating the Muslim ban will not keep anyone safer, but instead tear families apart. This ban demonizes millions of innocent people and creates anxiety and instability for people who want to visit a relative, work, study, return to the country they call home, or just travel without fear, according to Amnesty International. Make the Road New York's co-executive director, Javier Valdez, on behalf of the organization's 20,000 members, says Trump remains fixated on discriminating against and vilifying Muslims and refugees and betraying core American values of inclusiveness and fair treatment. Given that all the federal courts that have heard these cases have ruled against these bans, we strongly disagree with the Supreme Court's decision to take up the case and allow portions of the discriminatory policy to move forward. Make the Road New York said, "We will continue to stand up against Trump, his administration's blatant attempts to discriminate against Muslims and refugees, and our members stand ready to act in solidarity at the airports, at the courthouses, and in the streets. We remain confident that our side will again prevail, as we have done in courts around the country when the case is heard by the Supreme Court." In other news, the family of Philando Castile has reached a $3 million settlement over his shooting death by a police officer during a traffic stop. The settlement comes on the heels of the officer's acquittal of manslaughter charges. Castile, a 32-year-old school cafeteria worker, was shot seconds after informing Officer Yanez he was carrying a gun. Of course, no amount of money can compensate the loss of life, and the Castile family and community members continue to grieve over the death of Philando Castile and the fact that his killer got off. Officer Yanez was acquitted of manslaughter and other charges connected to the death. The shooting gained widespread attention after Castile's girlfriend, who was in the car with her then 4-year-old daughter, live-streamed its gruesome aftermath on Facebook. The acquittal of Yanez prompted days of protests, including one in St. Paul that shut down Interstate 94 for hours and ended with 18 arrests. The settlement happened faster than others, stemming from the killings of blacks by police officers elsewhere. Last week, a $1.5 million settlement was reached in the case of Mike Brown, the unarmed 18-year-old who was killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. That settlement came nearly 3 years after the death of Brown, whose parents sued the city. In 2015, New York City reached a $5.9 million settlement with the family of Eric Garner, the unarmed black man who died after being put in a chokehold by the white police officer Daniel Pantaleo. The family and civil rights advocates have been demanding that federal authorities bring a federal case against the officer since a state probe ended without charges against him. Garner was accused of selling loose untaxed cigarettes. He was stopped by police on Staten Island in 2014 and refused to be handcuffed. Pantaleo is seen on a cell phone video putting Garner in an apparent chokehold, which is banned under NYPD department policy. The heavyset Garner, who had asthma, is heard gasping, "I can't breathe." He later was pronounced dead at a hospital. His dying words became a slogan for the Black Lives Matter movement. The Supreme Court is rejecting yet another call to decide whether Americans have a constitutional right to carry guns with them outside their homes. The justices today left in place an appeals court ruling that upheld the San Diego sheriff's strict limits on issuing permits for concealed weapons. The high court decided in 2008 that the Constitution guarantees the right to a gun, at least for self-defense at home. More than 40 states already broadly allow gun owners to be armed in public.
The 2017 NYC Pride March officially steps off now. Happy Pride! Yes, Julian! That is true. Give it up for our friend Marsha P. Johnson up here being displayed by our friends showing love. Give it up for all of the trans and gay women of color here today who are repping for Marsha P. Johnson, who is not here. We love you, ladies and gentlemen, and here we go.
Chelsea Manning represented the ACLU at this year's New York City Pride March. She tweeted she lost her voice from screaming so much. She rode in a red sports car along with Tina Luongo from Legal Aid and others surrounded by rainbow flags and sashes. And resist signs, resist transphobia, resist the war against women, resist discrimination in schools. Gays Against Guns at New York City's 48th annual Pride Parade singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Olin Carley, a computer program manager, says the Pride Parade is inclusive.
It commemorates the whole community and their place in society and the celebration of what the community is all about. And the organization that I'm walking with here, Gays Against Guns, was formed in response to the Pulse massacre in Orlando a little bit over a year ago. Looking into the issue of gun violence and how that affects people everywhere, not just gay, lesbian people, but everyone. We had a terrible event a year ago where 49 people were massacred because of who they were.
At the Pride Parade, some people wore Make America Gay Again hats, some wore Black Lives Matter shirts and held up signs with fists and a rainbow background. Others protested cuts to health care, declaring that health care is an LGBTQ issue. The director of the ACLU's HIV project, James Essex, says Pride this year is extra important.
Because it's important for LGBTQ people to stand up and say, here we are, come and love us. Pride this year is extra important because we are a community under attack. We are a community under attack in part by the Trump administration and in part by state legislatures around the country that have proposed anti-trans and anti-LGBT laws at a level that we haven't seen ever.
For Essex, the healthcare conversation is very important.
The Affordable Care Act under Obama created protections for trans people and access to transition-related health care that we have never had, and it has been transformative in terms of access to Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance. And if the ACA goes away, those protections may go away as well. That would be terrible.
For Sheila Lair, a New York City public school teacher, the Pride Parade is a way she can march in support of her students.
This is important for me because I want to let others know that I am an ally, and especially my students who are lesbian, gay, trans, I want them to know that I'm with them and I love and support them. I think that what we're doing is great. I mean, we need to stand up for not just straight people, people of color, but also the LGBTQ community. We need to be able to resist because if we don't resist, then things won't change.
Andrew Frazier is with Gay Men's Health Crisis. He says, we have to be a community now more than ever.
And we have to show that we're proud to be who we are and that we represent our community with the most up honor and pride that we have. This year more important because we don't know what funding will be and so forth, so we all have to come together and be one.
Frazier echoes the sentiment of many others that the concern for healthcare is tremendous.
we are an organization, the first organization, that actually worked towards helping individuals who have HIV and AIDS. So healthcare is critical for the clients that we serve, and without it, many of them don't have insurance, don't have adequate right to care. So we have to ensure that they are linked to care, and that link to care continues. It's very important for individuals who are living with HIV and AIDS to be on their meds, and without adequate health care, they can't do that. So that's why more than ever we are strong, and we're showing our representation during this march to show that we care for every person in our community. Of course, with Obamacare being cut, and actually with the aspect of it not pre-existing issues, that raises a huge concern for us. So yes, we're going to do everything in our power to ensure that the clients and individuals who are living with HIV and AIDS get the medical care that they need and get that linkage to care, and that it continues.
Lady Clover Honey is a trans woman. She says she joins the march each year.
We have to resist and show that we're fabulous, and show that we're always going to continue to be fabulous. We're going to have our rights. No one will take them away from us, no matter what political tactics you have. We deserve health care. We deserve to be safe. We deserve to be who we are, what we are. And we deserve to be free and equal. We're all equal, no matter how fabulous or boring you are, or what your gender is.
I'm here today because, well, I'm gay, and I wanted to be here with my friends and see what it's like to be in this march.
A restaurant worker at IHOP in New Jersey, Catherine Jackless, says she loves being at the parade.
The importance is to show that we're here and we're important, you know what I mean? And like, we matter, so why not raise our voice and show that we are who we are, you know what I mean? The whole part that we were in the Rides Against part of it, which is like, you know, we were against Trump and how he just views the LGBTQ community as not important. He just doesn't give us enough importance as we should. So we were just chanting against him and stuff like that. So
Joy Episala is an activist who works with AIDS and healthcare activists, calling on Republicans to oppose the healthcare bill.
We only need 3 votes, and so you guys can look it up and pick out your phones and call them now, because it's not fair, remind them, it's not fair for them to have their health care and for us to lose ours. This whole thing is one big tax cut for the rich and the insurance companies, and everybody else, even if they're keeping pre-existing conditions, you're not going to be able to afford a health care premium. So we really want this to be voted down, and I think if any of those Republicans have any kind of conscience and care about ordinary Americans, then vote no.
Episala says our liberties are being taken away.
Our health care should be a right, and our health care is being taken away. And these people who get shot with guns still want to support the NRA. They want people who shouldn't have guns to have guns, and we're totally against that. Absolutely against it. And so I think there's a number of different, I mean, look, Black Lives Matter. How many people, black people have been shot down by police and the police get off? It's not right. You're not talking about all the Americans in this country. You're talking about a select few. And I think that the march this year shows how much people care and want to come out and say no to all these things. No to violence, no to guns, and no to their crappy health care.
For many, the march is hopeful and supportive. Jed Holtz is with the Campaign for an Elected Civilian Review Board in New York City.
Every pride is important. I mean, we are marching as queers and allies for full liberation, and that means different things to different people. But as long as, you know, the system doesn't really change and the people in power are the same, we have to fight for the same things, and for us that's police accountability, and we're bringing that issue to the queer community through our campaign. It's really important that we highlight the attacks that really, and the danger that those communities face, in particular the trans community of color. It's not to erase any other struggle, but it's just to see that there's still a heightened sense of state and you know, right-wing fascist violence against these people that's born out of ideology. So we need to, you know, highlight that issue, and it's an attack on all of us, especially in the queer community. We understand that. And the campaign we're marching for is a concrete reform for an elected civilian review board. So it would be, it's legislation that's we're aiming to go through the city council and be brought to the electorates of New York City to create a new oversight body called the Elected Civilian Review Board, or ECRB, to replace the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is defunct and appointed. So we're excited about this new legislation that has its roots in radical transformation of police accountability.
The Pride Parade marched across Fifth Avenue to Stonewall. The struggle against Trump's Health Care Act, gun violence, police brutality, these are all on the LGBTQ community's agenda. Pride is energetic, colorful, and hopeful. Thanks to WBAI's Akeem Killick for gathering audio at the Pride Parade. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other news, the Supreme Court has ruled for same-sex couples who complained an Arkansas birth certificate law discriminated against them. The justices today issued an unsigned opinion reversing an Arkansas High Court ruling that upheld the law. Under the law, married lesbian couples had to get a court order to have both spouses listed as parents on a child's birth certificate. Arkansas routinely lists a woman's husband as a child's father, even if he is not the biological parent of the child. Same-sex couples want the same presumption applied to the married partner of a woman who gives birth to a child. Justices Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito dissented from the ruling. And the Supreme Court is taking on a new clash between gay rights and a religion in a case about a wedding cake for a same-sex couple in Colorado. The justices said they will consider whether a baker who objects to same-sex marriage on religious grounds can refuse to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. The case asked the High Court to balance the religious rights of the baker against the couple's right to equal treatment under the law. Similar disputes have popped up across the U.S. For 2 years, Matthew Fenner said he pleaded with authorities to investigate his allegations that fellow congregants at the Word of Faith Fellowship Church had punched, slapped, and choked him to expel his quote-unquote homosexual demons. An AP investigation found that authorities delayed investigating and told Fenner his only option was to pursue misdemeanor charges against the church members he said assaulted him for nearly 2 hours in the church's sanctuary. An outside group backing Donald Trump will begin targeting more Republican holdouts on the Senate's health care bill. America's First Policies is expanding its campaign against Nevada Senator Dean Heller to include Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Utah Senator Mike Lee, and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Those are the lawmakers who came out against the bill as written when it was made public last week. A senior official with America First Policies says online and social media ads will remind voters that Republicans have promised to repeal Barack Obama's signature health care legislation. The group also is preparing radio and television ads to run ahead of the vote, which could come at the end of this week. As the Republican Senate proposal was being released, concerned activists and healthcare workers rallied in front of the Trump International Hotel in Columbus Circle. Armand Echeverry was there, and he sends this report.
When I say rise up, you say reasons, rise up!
Mark Milano has been a member of ACT UP for the last 30 years. He's also part of a group, Rise and Resist, which is focused on direct action in opposing the Trump agenda. Milano says it's far from perfect, but it was close to implementing a single-payer system where insured patients in both the private and public sectors would have leeway in choosing a plan under the Affordable Care Act. But, Milano says, insurance companies dropped the public option for profitable gain.
Obamacare is certainly not the solution that we were hoping for. The solution that we want is a single-payer system like Canada has, which works really well. That's what we wanted. And Obama actually was moving towards that. His plan, clearly, was to have one of the insurance plans in the Affordable Care Act to be the public option, which would be a government-run health plan like Medicare. And I'm sure his idea was because that would work so well and be so popular, it would take up more and more of the market, you know? And the insurance companies saw that, and they insisted that the public option be dropped. So we ended up with the ACA only offering private for-profit health insurance.
The Republican Senate replacement bill calls for eliminating subsidies like Medicaid expansion under Obamacare and capping Medicaid funding. It's a plan which Milano says will leave many like himself without health coverage.
Nothing. They're allowing states, by state, to remove the ban on exclusions for pre-existing conditions and put people like me, who have AIDS and cancer, into high-risk pools, which we already know from decades before Obamacare do not work. They are turning Medicaid into fixed block grants for states, which will cap the number of people on Medicaid. And overall, it leads to an $880 billion reduction in Medicaid. So the reach of the horrible things in this bill is so wide and dips into, it affects Medicare, it will affect people with private insurance, because luckily New York State, since 92, has not allowed coverage denied for pre-existing, but many states don't have that. So even if you have private insurance, this is going to affect you.
For Milano, putting the public option, a single federal insurance plan that would compete with private insurance companies, back onto the market is the most plausible approach. It would ensure that everyone receives Medicare through either private or public health insurance and Medicaid for the people who really need it.
So there are ways to make it more to competitive. There are ways to, you know, you have to offer more subsidies. You have to, really the thing you want to do is you want to put back the public option. You want to allow the government to run a Medicare. You want to basically open Medicare up to everybody who needs it. And people can either go on Medicare for all, or they can get private health insurance if they want it. So that's the way you make it work. There are also a number, I think, of regulatory tweaks that you could be doing. There are many things that you could think about, short of having single payer, which is the best, to tweak Obamacare. They are not interested in any of those. Let's be very clear. The only motivation behind this law is a tax cut for the richest 1%. I got up here earlier and I said, I am not here to oppose the Republican health care bill, because there is no Republican health care bill. It is not a health care bill.
Insurance companies still dominate. Pharmaceutical corporations still dominate. Hospitals that are for-profit or so-called not-for-profit, are making money. They're about the business of making money.
Judy Sheridan Gonzalez is president of the New York State Nurses Association. She says insurance companies have economic leverage under the current healthcare system, which creates the pretense that inflated costs keep their companies operating.
Some of them say to keep themselves afloat, but we see these really inflated CEO salaries and administrative costs and consultants and the computers cost like $1 billion to get a computer system that is not designed to care for patients. It's really designed for billing. Everything is about billing and marketing and, you know, customer, you know, service as if we're in a hotel. That's how healthcare is now. We dream and wish for a healthcare system where we can actually take care of our patients. Nearly one-third of every healthcare dollar is spent on stuff that's absolutely not related to healthcare at all.
For Jennifer, who is with the Center for Popular Democracy, Obamacare is a great help. It makes it affordable for her family to get health insurance.
That would not have happened before Obamacare. I would have had to have, had my kids in super after daycare that goes till 8 o'clock at night so that I could pick them up. And my sister has Down syndrome. My mother and my sister live together in New Jersey. My sister is 47 years old. She functions at about a 1.5-year-old. So she can walk, but she can't talk. It's common, actually, they are now learning, because people with Down syndrome are living longer. It's common for people with Down syndrome to also have Alzheimer's. And they get it early onset Alzheimer's. So it seems as if she is now suffering from Alzheimer's. So she is actually losing the skills that she's developed over all of these years. So she's actually learned, she's losing the ability to walk. So my 83-year-old mother is taking care of her with almost no help, because in New York, in New Jersey, they've already implemented the kinds of cuts that we will see when they do the per capita caps on Medicaid.
Anna Reyes is a nurse at Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx and a member of the New York State Nurses Association. She says she sees patients every day who are suffering, and she says she sees our healthcare system being destroyed and manipulated.
We see patients every day that are suffering. We see our healthcare being destroyed, being manipulated. We see these patients that can't afford their medications, and they're coming back less every 3 weeks, every month, every 3 months. And their conditions are getting worse. Their conditions are getting worse, they're getting sicker. They can't pay for their medication, and they're using their ER as their clinics, because their clinics are making them wait 2 to 4 hours, even though they're early for their appointments. If they cut any more, we're gonna have real serious complications. These patients are going to die.
Gonzalez also says that 23 states have already blocked getting the money for Medicaid, so that leaves many people underinsured. And another problem is that people who have insurance can't afford the deductibles, so they go without medication or other care that they need. Whether the Republicans and Democrats will come together, and whether a public option is put back into the mix, remains to be seen. Armand Echeverry, WBAI News, New York.
And a final note, WBAI is under attack by the corporation which owns the Empire State Building.
Remember, the founders of our country set aside, you know, a single industry in the First Amendment of the Constitution, and it's freedom of the press. And even back then, when our country was founded, they realized that it was so important that there be an independent check on big government and big corporations. And, you know, they weren't very big back then. Think of what they're like now. And, you know, I'm so glad that WBAI is standing up for what journalism is all about, and standing up and providing information that you cannot hear on any of the other stations.
Pacifica Foundation's Executive Director Bill Crozier on the need for WBAI. But our station, WBAI, is under attack, and so is our parent organization, the Pacifica Radio Network, Empire State Realty Trust, which owns the Empire State Building where we lease space to house our transmitter, wants $2.1 million from us for rent over the past 3 years, more than $50,000 a month. We want to pay them market rate $12,000 a month and be released from the next 3 years of the lease. So they're suing us. They want us to sell our license to pay them. Empire State Realty Trust filed a motion against WBAI Pacifica, which goes to a judge on June 30th. If you want to join other listeners who are trying to correct the wrong being done, you might call Empire State Realty Trust to ask them to release WBAI from the next 3 years of the lease and negotiate a fair settlement. The board chair and CEO of Empire State Realty Trust is Anthony Malkin. He's at 212-687-8700. Again, Anthony Malkin at 212-687-8700. You also might want to contact your city council members and local and state representatives to step in on behalf of WBAI in New York. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.